Hi folks, you're listening to the A Minute to Midnight show. My name is Tony, and on the show today I have returning guests Doug Woodward and Gary Huffman. And don't forget, our website is aminutetomidnight.com, so check the website out and also subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already done so. I want to welcome back to the A Minute to Midnight show Doug Woodward and Gary Huffman. These guys have been on the show a few times now, sort of becoming returning guests, which is great because I really enjoy our conversations. And I think today's one's going to be pretty awesome as well. So it's great to be chatting to you, Doug and Gary, again.
Thank you for, you know, allowing us back on your program. It's good to know that we haven't insulted you or, you know, done anything to cause you not to want to have us on the show.
Yes, thank you, Tony.
Oh, you've insulted me something terrible, but, you know, I've grinned and bearded and had you back.
Exactly.
No, it's really good. I enjoy our conversations. So, and I think today's subject's going to be really a fascinating one as we delve into Babylon and Mystery Babylon. And we've had other opinions on the show, so it'll be really good to hear what you two have to say about it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it certainly is a topical thing. Recently, it was probably, just a few weeks ago, you had our good brothers Bill Salas and Joel Richardson on talking about their debate, which they've been on quite a few shows talking about that debate. And so we're going to offer up an opinion that disagrees with both of them, just to, you know, just to sort of throw some cold water, I guess, on that fire.
And that will be interesting because, I have a different view than them as well. And no doubt my view won't be completely in line with yours either, but I'm sure we will find a lot that we do have in common. So, sure. And it's just awesome to hear the different points of view, because then we can really start to build a picture of the different options. Yep. Anyway.
Exactly. Yep. No, that's right.
So, Doug, where do you want to begin us with?
Yeah, well, just a little history. Myself, writing with two gentlemen, Douglas Krieger and Dean McGriff, we wrote a book about 5 years ago called The Final Babylon. And it was dealing with the question of whether or not the United States might in fact be Mystery Babylon, or the Babylon of the Bible, which I argue is sort of a multifaceted, multi-faced creature. And we'll talk about that as we go along here. But we wrote that book 5 years ago, got a lot of reaction. We were on quite a number of shows talking about that. I have not changed my opinion much. I still believe that if we are speaking prophetically, especially in the United States, if we're not speaking about the evil that has been transpiring within our government and within major corporations at the highest level, then prophecy has become sort of an academic exercise. And so I happen to believe that if the Lord were to come back anytime soon, like let's say in the next 10 years, which probably a lot of us think that there's a good chance that he will, that there really is only one logical, or maybe two logical possibilities. And really neither of them, in my view, are Rome or Mecca. The United States, either singly or sort of the Anglo-American conspiracy, if you will, between Wall Street and the City of London, that from my standpoint, they represent the greatest sort of axis of evil, if you will, in the world today, not just the financial aspects, but as it's supported by the actions of major corporations, by the actions of various facets of the U.S. government, the Department of Justice, State Department, military, and intelligence departments. All of these things hang together and I believe cause, or really give I think, substance or support to the notion that the U.S., in fact, could well be the Babylon of the tribulation period.
Well, myself, if I were to think that Babylon is described as being the hammer of the whole earth. Now, if Mystery Babylon was to be revealed today, I think there's only one nation that could fit that bill, and that is the United Nations. And if Babylon were the United States, and the United Nations are headquartered at the United States, which was part of my train of thought, being in New York, which I think adds more to that, because I believe the United Nations and the Luciferianism that's promoted by the United Nations, largely in New York, is a big part of this. And the other thing is, if a city were to be destroyed in the world today and was called That Great City, to me, there's only two candidates that really fit that city of being that great city, and that's either New York or London.
Right. Well, that's essentially the same sort of mindset that I have had and that many others have had. You know, when you listen to Joel and Bill, who I respect, by the way, greatly, you listen to them present the case for either Mecca or Rome, and really specifically the Catholic Church, as in effect Mystery Babylon, it really overlooks a slew of scholars and writers and researchers that have written books on this issue over the last 15, 20 years. Unfortunately, many of them have passed away and gone on to be with the Lord. I don't think that's any kind of a symbol as to the fact that their point of view was wrong and the Lord was taking them, you know, home. But I think that it testified to the fact that there are many, you know, wise teachers and scholars and researchers that have written for many, many years. Let me just give you a few examples. One of the oldest ones that had been doing this for many years was Noah Hutchings of Southwest Radio Church, which is here in Oklahoma City. He had written about this book that he wrote called The U.S. in Prophecy. And he was quoting, I can't think of Frank's last name, Frank Logsdon, who was back in the 1960s the pastor of the Moody Church in Chicago. And they together, what Noah Hutchings does is sort of revamp the Logsdon's book, and this was published, I think, in 2000, and it reinforced once again that the United States is a very viable candidate for Babylon or Mystery Babylon. And again, we'll talk about the fact that there's multiple facets, an economic facet, a religious facet, a political and military facet to Babylon. John Price, who I had the good fortune of having John write a forward to one of my books, The Next Great War in the Middle East. John wrote a book called The End of America, where he talks a lot about Islam, but he talks about Islam in the context of what's happening in the United States, what's happening in Europe. And he, you know, was basically stated in the foreword to my book that he felt that I had probably broken the code, which I hope he was right, about the fact that America is very much at the center of what's happening in the Great Tribulation. Unfortunately, it's wearing the black hat. Patrick Heron, a good brother from Ireland, he passed away quite a number of years ago, but he talks about the return of the Antichrist in his book, talks about New York City. Dr. Stanley Monteith, who I got to know, the late Stanley Monteith, and then his wife Barbara, who's a sweetheart, I got to know them in the last few years of Dr. Monteith's life. He wrote a book called Brotherhood of Darkness, which he really had a chance to do a lot of research into the Illuminati, into the New World Order, and it was his considered opinion that when we're dealing with Mystery Babylon, we're dealing a great deal with Luciferianism, Satanism, and the way that it's influencing governmental powers, corporate powers, and so forth. Thomas Horn, his book Apollyon Rising 2012, gave a very strong opinion that America would be at the center of the tribulation period and that the powers that be in America could in fact be the sort of the locus or the center point of the Antichrist. I like to say the sort of the base of operations of Antichrist. Let's see. So far, all of these gentlemen except Tom Horn have passed away. Another gentleman that's passed away, J.R. Church, he wrote in The Guardians of the Grail, reinforcing a lot of the same passages that we talked about in The Final Babylon as passages that really relate to the United States and or the United States and England sort of combined, the Anglo-American alliance, if you will, that it would be or very likely could be the powerhouse of the last days. R.A. Coombs wrote a book, America the Babylon, which also talked about in great detail. I think he came up with something like 70 reasons why America is the final Babylon. A gentleman named Stuart Alsop, I believe his name is, that also has written a book, which I don't know the title of it, but it's in the same category. And so anyway, there's Rob Skiba had also written a book on that. So there's really a lot of voices that are testifying that America is at the center of this because America is such a dominant power financially, politically, militarily. And so when you weave all those things together, there's a very good argument. And of course, we haven't really even touched on the scripture yet. We've just been looking at characteristics of kind of geopolitics today. So anyway, so that's kind of the background, I think, in the history of why we came, Krieger, McGriff, and I came to the same conclusion that the United States very likely could be the final Babylon, if you will.
Of course, Dimitri Dudeman also is another one that believed that. And I'm pretty sure exactly. David Wilkerson did as well. So
yes,
yeah. So Gary, what's your thoughts there?
Well, so far I'm with Doug 100%. And now didn't one other one that we could add to that? Didn't William Cooper or Bill Cooper? Didn't he talk about some of this things?
Yeah, I think so. Anyone in the prophecy sort of circuit that really emphasizes the New World Order has to see America at the middle of this because what was it, Pappy Bush, you know, or Poppy Bush, I think is what his kids called him, George H.W. Bush, talked about the New World Order, I don't know, over a dozen times in his speeches. And that America, and of course, we can just look at the history of it. If you look at the history of the League of Nations, the United Nations, the Council on Foreign Relations, you know, the United States has played host to virtually all of these. And yeah, obviously, the UN is New York City is the city to which all the nations stream, which is actually a verse in Jeremiah 50 and 51 really read like a description of the attributes of the United States. And frankly, although some people argue that the old Babylon, the city on Euphrates, that it will revive, that could be possible, but we're talking about perhaps a 40-50 year process, not only because it might be able to be built in 10 years, but goodness knows, it might take 40 or 50 before it becomes a dominant financial and political capital of the world. So, So anyway, yes.
Hey, Doug. So, you know, I know New York fits very well, and there's a lot of reasons, a lot of symbolic reasons, with even with the Statue of Liberty and everything. But now, what about? I'm just asking your opinion right here on the air, so to speak.
All right, put me on the spot. Go ahead.
So, like in Tom Horn's book, I think it's probably Zenith 2016 or whatever, Apollyon Rising.
That was sort of a rewrite of Apollyon 2012, right?
Yeah. What? Where he talks about Washington, D.C. and Rome, how the symbolism there is very similar with the obelisk and the dome.
Right.
The dome or womb of Isis, you know.
Exactly.
As symbolic. And then also, I don't know if he mentioned this, but also then, of course, you mentioned London, but they have a big obelisk in London, too. I mean, they're all over the world, but
it's
interesting that those three – in my mind, you know, I'm not taking New York out of that. It's also very symbolic, I'm sure. But right. Those three as being, you know, like Washington, D.C., maybe political / military Babylon or mystery Babylon leadership, headship.
Right.
London as the financial Babylon headship. and Rome as the religious Babylon headship, you know,
right.
And all of the paganism and Gnosticism and everything glumped together with Rome as the headship, so to speak. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, that there's this kind of interesting verse, Revelation 16, 19, that says, "And this great city was divided into three parts."
Yeah, and that's
what three parts are we talking about? And I think what we suggest, which I think you're alluding to as well, is that I kind of briefly mentioned it earlier, that there is sort of a religious Babylon, a commercial Babylon, and a military political Babylon. You might see religious Babylon really take the center stage in chapter 17 of Revelation, whereas commercial Babylon really is the focal point for Revelation 18, and then a brief sort of political, military indication of Babylon in Revelation 19, which of course is ultimately where Babylon has fallen. And so there's a lot of factors in play here, and I am not inclined to cite either, just the Roman Catholic Church or Islam, the city of Mecca, as being the fulfillment of Mystery Babylon.
Right.
We can kind of dig into that some more in terms of historically how it's been understood. But I think ever since John basically said in one of his epistles that it's something I'm paraphrasing here, but little children, it has been said that Antichrist will come. Well, yes, but the Antichrist has already come into the world, and so he was essentially saying that the spirit of Antichrist, has been and will continue to be sort of this pernicious presence throughout the life of the church. And so I guess Tony, using Joel Richardson's definition of historicism, from that standpoint, I think John the Apostle was a historicist, and I would be too.
Yeah.
So not to say that that there won't be a culmination of, like I said, the final Babylon, which is really what that name is inferring, is that there have been many Babylons, but there will be ultimately a final Babylon. And right now, I think that's what we on the front page, or rather the cover of the book, the late Chris Putnam essentially argued that, if we're correct about the Lord coming soon, then there is really no choice. It has to be the United States.
Yeah, though I will say I've kind of also got my eye on NEOM and Saudi Arabia as a possibility, because if that were to arise as quickly as they're planning it to, and to be as huge as they're planning it to, and it being in the Middle East, I haven't completely discounted that as a possibility either. So,
right. Well, it's a very good point. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, of course, a lot of other people say that Jerusalem is it, because it's called that great city of Sodom in Egypt in the book of Revelation. Mm-hmm. But the biggest problem I see with that is that Jerusalem continues, whereas Mystery Babylon doesn't.
Yeah, it's destroyed.
Yeah.
All right, I agree. Yeah, and the very fact that in Revelation that Jerusalem is called, it's called, there's the reference to the city in which our Lord was crucified, and it's that great city, Sodom and Egypt. And so there's already a symbolism or a foretyping, basically saying that I'm not necessarily speaking of literally of Jerusalem. I'm speaking of a great city that, has the characteristics of Sodom and Egypt. It's really Sodom being a great city of sin, and Egypt being sort of the ultimate political power that was against Israel at its birth.
Yeah, it does say it's the city where the Lord was crucified, which that can only be Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't necessarily follow that that great city that's being talked of there is the same one that's being described as the city of Babylon that's destroyed in later chapters. Yeah, that's the way I view it. Yeah.
Yeah, Gary, were you going to insert something?
Well, and I think, what you were establishing before, that Mystery Babylon has been at work for several thousand years, and it is at work today. It can be at work in Jerusalem. And I think you can think of ways that it is through the Vatican, number one, and maybe even through the Rothschild, Tony.
Yeah.
And so Mystery Babylon is at work there, but yet the final Babylon, the city that becomes the manifestation in the end that is destroyed, might be a totally different city. But yet that those verses about Jerusalem are true also, because Mystery Babylon is at work there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really think that the occult world, the Luciferians, want Jerusalem, and they want a third temple to rule the earth. You know, that's part of their, I think they think that they can get occult power by using that. So,
well, yeah, I think that they understand the prophecy of the Antichrist appearing in the temple to proclaim himself God, and to speak, you know, unspeakable blasphemies, to again paraphrase Daniel and mm-hmm. And others, by the way. So we expect that's still to come. So yeah, I'm a futurist too, for sure. So yeah, but there, you know, again, there are so many characteristics, and we go through those and talk about those in that book and in other places. And then, of course, Tony, I'm going to share with you a slide deck for folks that may wish to go through it in detail, and you may wish to, you know, to include some of these pictures and so forth as part of this presentation. But you know, when you begin to study Jeremiah 51, where the scripture is talking about the daughter of Babylon, and talking about its destruction and the characteristics of that Babylon, virtually none of them relate to the old Babylon on the Euphrates. That more or less it was sort of destroyed in stages, until it was eventually sort of no more. Although many, you know, even the late brother Chuck Missler was supportive of the concept that, you know, the Babylon might be rebuilt, because he believed that Jeremiah 50 and 51, you know, really were going to be fulfilled in a rebuilt Babylon. So it's not like that there's not some great Bible teachers and researchers that believe that, because they do. But what happens, though, from my standpoint, is that most of the teachers out there are missing the boat when it comes to how the United States fulfills so many qualities of, you know, or attributes of the daughter of Babylon. And that ought to cause every American to take a very close sort of introspective look at why does America fulfill so many of those prophetic assertions in the Bible.
Well, that's probably a good place to begin then, to actually to run through some of them so people can go, okay, well,
sure.
How does America fit?
Yeah. Well, I'll just run through them. There's a dozen or so here that I can speak to. Jeremiah 50, verse 12 says, "Your mother shall be greatly ashamed. She who gave you birth shall be humiliated." Doesn't really relate well to Babylon. But the mother of the United States is Great Britain.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are those that have suggested that perhaps the United States will be destroyed, but Great Britain will not be. And so England will, in effect, be ashamed at what has happened to the United States. You mentioned earlier the hammer of the whole earth. That's Jeremiah 50:23. The prophet says, "How is the hammer of the whole earth cut asunder and broken? How is Babylon become a desolation among the nations?" And you know, again, Babylon sort of slowly ebbed away. It even though it was conquered by the Medes and the Persians in 539 BC. Alexander the Great still made it his capital city in 323, I think it was, BC. And so, you know, Babylon sort of slowly, like General MacArthur said about old generals, how they don't die, they just fade away. Babylon sort of faded away, you know, eventually being sort of overcome with ruins and its great bricks and all that broken down and used for other buildings and so forth. But, you know, who else is the hammer of the whole earth? The U.S. is responsible for just under 50% of all spending on the military in the world today. So, you know, you combine all the other nations of the world and all their spending, and it just equals what the United States by itself spends. The U.S. at any given time can have, you know, as few as 700 or as many as 1,000 military bases all across the world. You know, the United States is the policeman of the world, and there's really no one else that can even begin to lay claim to that. I think Russia has about 3 bases outside of, you know, outside of Russia and China. China's trying to build some bases in the, of those islands out there in the South China Sea, but otherwise it's the United States. Yeah. You want to make a comment, Tony?
No, I was just, you know, agreeing that that certainly does make sense. But I was thinking, yeah, I mean, if Russia or China tries to build any bases anywhere else, there's an immediate outcry.
Right. No doubt about it. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, we've got Russia surrounded on all sides. And we talk about, you know, we're in the States complaining about how Russia was fiddling around with our election. But if one looks at all of these so-called color revolutions across the world, guess who's behind almost all those color revolutions?
Yeah.
One of those groups in the United States called the CIA.
Yeah.
You know, the CIA has been involved in overthrowing governments, involved even in overthrowing Russia, the, you know, the old Soviet Union. Dr. Steve Pachinik, and who's a frequent guest on Alex Jones, talks about his role in overturning and destroying the Soviet Union. So the U.S. has been doing it for a long time. We kind of overlook the fact that Barack Obama actually campaigned actively against Netanyahu.
And yeah. So, yeah, I was just thinking about that.
Not like the U.S. is an isolationist. Really not. So, you know, if you look at, for instance, the ability to project force, the United States has approximately 20 carrier groups. 11 of those are Navy, 9 of those are Marines. The Marine carriers are smaller, and they're basically portable helicopter takeoff and landing points for the Marines. But, you know, U.S. has 20 carriers. If you bring all of the other carriers of the rest of the world together, it equals about 11 or 12. And there's none that are as large as the carriers that are as powerful as the U.S. has. So, you know, we basically have the greatest military that's ever been built. No question about it. There's a next thing that's interesting is that this nation, the daughter of Babylon, is called the hindermost of the nations. And it says in Jeremiah 50:12 that, behold, the hindermost of the nations shall be a wilderness, a dry land, and a desert. Hindermost is the Hebrew word akariath. And I'm probably butchering the pronunciation, so anyone out there that's Hebrew, please forgive me, or that speaks Hebrew. But it typically means the end, the last one of a line. The New International Version translates it the least of nations. That's not what it means. It means sort of the final nation. You know, will be the daughter of Babylon. And so the inference is that the United States is sort of the last great empire of the world, you know, if it were to fulfill that. It's a nation of great wealth and luxury. There's about, 6 verses here I'll just run through. So we know we're dealing a lot with economic power, consumerism, and so forth. Jeremiah 50:12 says, because you are grown fat as the heifer at grass. Jeremiah 50:37, a sword is upon her treasures. Jeremiah 51:13, you who are rich in treasures. Revelation 17:4, the woman was dressed in purple and scarlet and was glittering with gold, precious stones, and pearls. Revelation 18:7, give her as much torture and grief as the glory and luxury she gave herself. Revelation 18:9, when the kings of the earth who committed adultery with her and shared her luxury. So you see all these verses pointing to the fact that this nation is very wealthy. It really is the center of luxury, of consumerism. And so there's not many nations that can boast of that. And certainly Saudi Arabia can, but only if you're one of the members of the House of Saud.
Exactly.
If you're in the middle class, which there is virtually no middle class, then you have next to nothing. So whereas the United States, we like to complain about the fact that, you know, times are tough. But the reality is that, you know, we're still on a per capita basis one of the most richest nations that's ever been. So those are four. I'll pause for any comments, either of you guys, before I keep rattling off. There's more to come.
Gary.
I just have a couple thoughts on Mystery Babylon, not necessarily related to the United States. So I would like you to just keep on going, Doug.
Keep on cooking?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. One of the characteristics that is interesting, Jeremiah 50:37, talks about the fact that the daughter of Babylon is a multi-ethnic melting pot nation. Jeremiah says, a sword is upon her, the mingled people that are in the midst of her. And of course, mingled people basically is inferring that, you know, sort of the mixture of the blend of all sorts of people. So it is reminiscent of the slogan or motto on the Statue of Liberty of, you know, give me your tired, your poor, your humbled masses, yearning to be free. And it is indeed a melting pot. Let's see. I have a quote here from this guy, Hector St. John de Couvecour, 1782. He said, whence came all these people? Well, they are a mixture of English, Scotch, Irish, French, Dutch, Germans, and Swedes. What then is the American, this new man? He is neither a European nor the descendant of a European, hence that strange mixture of blood which you will find in no other country. And so characteristic of the daughter of Babylon, the United States fits to a T. I don't believe that you can say the same thing about Mecca or even Rome. Yeah, there's a few cardinals that are from other nations, but they're mostly, they have vowels at the end of their names. Let's see. A nation that lives on many waters. Right. This was the sixth thing. This is Jeremiah 51:13. You who live by many waters and are rich in treasures, your end has come, the time for you to be cut off, which is an idiom for being put to death or destroyed. You know, the United States has the unusual attribute, I guess, of being surrounded by oceans, sort of on three sides, the Atlantic, the Pacific, and the Gulf of Mexico. And so it very much is a nation that has been set apart and protected to a great extent from the European wars because of her oceans. That began to change, obviously, in World War I, and then World War II sort of became not a point anymore. While U.S. has 2% of the landmass of the world, it has 20% of the fresh water in the world. 22 states have ports, 400 ports across the United States. So, you know, it's difficult for Mecca. It's even difficult for Rome to talk in terms of being a nation that lives on many waters. Revelation 17, of course, talks about, you know, the waters you saw where the prostitute Babylon the Great sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and languages. So you get the sense that there is this sort of great mixture that's come together of different types of peoples and nations and so forth. And it doesn't fit well to look at Rome or Mecca from that standpoint, I don't believe. We're talking about something here that really is sort of the center of the world. Revelation 18 says, woe, woe, O great city, where all who had ships in the sea became rich through her wealth. In 1 hour, she became brought to ruin. We won't have time to talk about it here, but in the book and in this PowerPoint that I'm using as a reference, a lot of emphasis on studying Tarshish, the Prince of Tyre, the Phoenicians, the Canaanites. The Canaan actually means merchant. And it says, in heaven, there will be no Canaanites. There will be no more merchants. And so there's a huge correlation between the United States as that merchant nation. Certainly the scene in Revelation 18, where you have all of the captains at sea surrounding the city, seeing it destroyed. You know, we saw, I think, a foretaste of this during 9/11, when you saw the smoldering buildings and the smoke filtering up high into the sky. And, you know, when I looked at that, and I remember telling people, you know, that is an image that is probably going to be repeated when Babylon is totally destroyed. And it's probably not accidental that this foreshadowing occurred in New York City.
That's a good point. So, of course, the other thing is there is an actual literal Babylon place called Babylon in the entrance to New York Harbor, which is also and then you got the Statue of Ishtar, Statue of Liberty.
That's right. Supposedly the Statue of Liberty, of course, is Ishtar, Isis, or whatever. There's many names, Diana of the old Sumerians and so forth. So, what I've been told is that Libertas is actually supposed to be Apollo in a woman's robe, basically. And, of course, Apollo and Apollyon and all that all tied together. And kind of just to reinforce this, Revelation 18, 17 through 19, I'll read that passage. For in 1 hour so great riches has come to naught, and every shipmaster and all the company and ships and sailors and as many as trade by sea stood afar off and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness. For in 1 hour she is made desolate. So, it's interesting to make note that the Prince of Tyre in Ezekiel 28, there are sort of aspersions cast at the Prince of Tyre by the prophet Ezekiel. And, of course, that is the same passage that we apply to Satan himself. And there is this connection, as you kind of read that passage, where you sort of see this reference to Satan and to merchants sort of all woven together. And I don't think it's an overstatement to say that capitalism, and I'm still a capitalist, but let's say unbridled capitalism, greed, money, all of that constitutes the most dominant religion of humankind today. Not Islam, not Catholicism, not evangelicalism, but the love of money. It is a dominant religion. And so I think that's one of the reasons why you see it so much at the center of the description of that great city, Babylon. You know, it's not just the harlot. It's not just the religious aspect of it, but it is, partially that. Goodness knows we've seen a lot and heard a lot of folks talk about the relationship between Rome, the Jesuits, world leaders, for 200 years or more. So there is that aspect to it. I wouldn't say there's not. We certainly know that Mecca is clearly a city that is celebrating, let's say, satanic, the worship of Satan through Allah. I mean, we Christians believe that. And so you've got that going on. But by the same token, neither of those cities really even begin to meet this issue of the great consumerism, the merchant power, the political power, and so forth. The United States, while we talk about its decline at points in time, still is predominantly the world currency, the world reserve currency, and so forth. So there's a verse in Jeremiah that talks about how the daughter of Babylon will mount up to the heavens. You know, though Babylon should mount up to heaven, and though she should fortify the height of her strength, yet from me spoilers come unto her, saith the Lord. So, first nation to have men on the moon, the United States, the Star Wars defense system, perhaps a secret space program. All these things are factors that characterize the United States' connection to space or to the heavens.
Go ahead. A new one, Space Force.
Yeah, and the Space Force, right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I want to be a member of the Space Force. So this one, I think, is particularly intriguing. This is Jeremiah 51:44, really referencing, I think, the United Nations. It says, and the nations shall not flow together anymore unto him, meaning that, and it says in Jeremiah 41, actually still in the same verse, different phrase, and it says, and the nations will no longer stream to him. So there's this idea that all of the nations are flowing to this daughter of Babylon, to this great city, but they will stop going towards that city because she will be destroyed. And she will be destroyed, it is interesting, by the 10 kings and the Antichrist. And so the Antichrist will survive and succeed this great city that's destroyed. You know, the queen of the kingdoms, Isaiah 47, talks about the daughter of Babylon. It says, sit in silence, go in the darkness, daughter of the Babylonians. No more will you be called the queen of kingdoms. Of course, you see this interplay between the prophecies of Isaiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, with the book of Revelation. I think I was listening to Chuck Missler, a talk by him from a number of years ago, where he talked about the fact that there are over 400 allusions to the Old Testament prophecies in the prophecy of the book of Revelation. And so clearly you see, you know, the inspiration that had to be in play there when the book of Revelation was being written, because of all of the prophecies of the Old Testament that were referenced and sort of brought together in a very, you know, consistent, unique way in the book of Revelation. I'll go on. There's a couple more that are pretty powerful. This Babylon has to have a large Jewish population. And that really limits. You don't see that in Mecca or
okay,
in Rome.
Okay, so where do you get that from, the Jewish population?
All right, Jeremiah 50, 4 through 5. In those days, at that time, declares the Lord, the people of Israel and the people of Judah together will go in tears to seek the Lord their God. They will ask the way to Zion and turn their faces toward it. They will flee out of Babylon. They will leave the land of the Babylonians. Zechariah 2:7, come, O Zion, escape, you who live in the daughter of Babylon. Isaiah 48:20, leave Babylon, flee from the Babylonians. Announce this with shouts of joy and proclaim it. Send it out to the ends of the earth. Say, quote, the Lord has redeemed his servant Jacob. And
all three of the Jews better get out of Saudi Arabia then, hadn't they?
Exactly. Yeah. And the two that are still in Iraq that are going to rebuild, you know, Babylon on the Euphrates.
Yeah.
So, you know, so this is a pretty powerful one. And of course, you know, essentially the world population for Jews is, it's basically 14 million. It's 7 million in Israel and 7 million in the United States. And it's sort of like next to none anywhere else. I mean, there were those that lived in France, and many of them have already moved back after some of the attacks that have occurred in the last two or three years.
There's still a few of us down here as well.
Yeah, well, there's probably not too many of you. I didn't know if you were Jewish.
Yeah.
Probably not too many of you that are there down under. You know, so
no, I think there's some in Guatemala as well, and places like that. So, but it wouldn't be huge numbers. But
we're talking a handful. Let's see. I've got it here that what is it, the total population, this was done in like 19 this was done in year 2012.
Right.
The world had 14 million Jews, 6.8 were in the United States, 6.2 were in Israel, and then all of the rest sort of combined together to you know, this comprise about 2% of the rest of the, you know, the Jewish population across the world. So quite a few in Canada, which of course is our sister Babylon to the north. So Babylon had been a golden cup in the hand of the Lord. It's Jeremiah 51:7. Of course, the United States has provided more money and sent more missionaries throughout the world than any nation ever has. And yet at the same time, we've also done more to export pornography more than any nation ever has. So, you know, we're definitely the standard setter for abortion since 1973. We've had over 60 million abortions in the United States. So, you know, we talk about Revelation 18:24, the blood of saints. Well, there's more saints that have been killed through abortion than any other means, because all those aborted babies go straight to heaven. Mm. So, you know, so it pales in comparison to the, you know, the massacres of that Rome, the Catholic Church, has committed against Protestants and against other splinter groups that the Catholics didn't like to see. And then, of course, Mecca has killed thousands. In fact, you know, some say that today is I think the Voice of the Martyr said more Christians have been killed in the last 2 or 3 years by Islam than at any other time in history. So lots of martyrs. But if you factor in the abortion, you know, that basic issue that's been going on in America for the last 50 years, it's bad. You know, let's see. So I get also into this discussion about the whole issue of Madame Blavatsky, the Illuminati, the secret doctrine, you know, more recently, spirit cooking meals, Pedigate, all of the information that's now kind of bleeding out about the stars and the politicians in the United States and in England that are hooked into pedophilia. So you've got some of the grossest sins that are occurring in our nations. A lot of good people, but a lot of incredibly evil people. And, you know, so that's going on. And then there's this issue about the daughter of Babylon betraying Israel. At some point in time, Jeremiah 51:24 says, "Before your eyes, I will repay Babylon and all who live in Babylonia for all the wrong they have done in Zion, declares the Lord." Jeremiah 51:35-36, "May the violence done to our flesh be upon Babylon, says the inhabitants of Zion. May our blood be on those who live in Babylonia, says Jerusalem. Therefore, this is what the Lord says, see, I will defend your cause and avenge you. Babylon must fall because of Israel slain, just as the slain in all the earth have fallen because of Babylon." That's Jeremiah 51:49. Jeremiah 51:56, "A destroyer will come against Babylon. Her warriors will be captured, and their bows will be broken. For the Lord is a God of retribution. He will repay in full." So while the United States has been the great defender of current day Israel, the Zionist Israel, and I, you know, I happen to be an advocate for the independent Jewish nation, but by the same token, I'm not blind to the fact that most of the folks living in Israel are secular Jews, not religious, and many of them are atheists, not believers. So someday this Babylon will be destroyed. You know, Jeremiah 50, there's about five different verses. "For lo, I will raise and cause to come up against Babylon an assembly of great nations from the north country. They shall set themselves in array against her. From thence she shall be taken. Their arrows shall be as a mighty expert man. None shall return in vain." Another verse I'll read, verse 13 from chapter 50. "Because of the wrath of the Lord, it shall not be inhabited, but it shall be wholly desolate. Every one that goeth by Babylon shall be astonished and hiss at all her plagues." So a sound of battle in the land and of great destruction, verse 22. Verse 23, "How is the hammer of the whole earth cut asunder and broken? How has Babylon become a desolation among the nations?" So it appears that, and this is kind of what I worked into the book, The Next Great War in the Middle East, is that United States could be destroyed prior to the tribulation actually beginning, that the daughter of Babylon is destroyed. But it's still very possible, because I still believe that Mystery Babylon it transcends any one city. It represents as a symbol all of the cities that stand opposed to God, Babylon being sort of the icon of those cities. And certainly if you look historically at the commentaries of all of these different experts through the many hundreds of years in church history, they some see Rome, you know, as Rome specifically as the culprit, as Mystery Babylon. Many, though, see the what they call a world city, of which Babylon is merely a reference point, a symbol, but that the world city is the city that stands opposed to the Holy Jerusalem, to the New Jerusalem, which represents the kingdom of God. So the kingdom of man, the kingdom of Satan versus the kingdom of God. And that really is the, you know, the tale of two cities, which is really what the Bible is all about. So
what about what about the seven mountains or seven hills? Because that's obviously one that people are going to throw at this and say, well, how does that fit with your scenario?
Right.
Because, you know, people will say Rome sits on seven hills and Jerusalem sits on seven hills. And potentially, I think even Neom. Yeah. And Neom, I think also will.
Right. Well, and it may there. If you look up in Wikipedia, and just look up for the cities that sit on seven hills, you'll see that if you count them carefully, it's almost 70 cities around the world claim to be cities that sit on seven hills. And so you've got these actually kind of contradictory, if you take them all literally, in chapter 17, you've got the great city that's dressed, you know, in purple and scarlet. You've got the harlot, in other words. You've got the city that sits on seven hills or seven mountains. You have the issue of, you know, is that Rome, which was, you know, in ancient times known as the city that sits on seven hills, or is it seven kingdoms? It talks later in the chapter that it is seven kingdoms. It's not seven hills. And we certainly see, I think it's in Daniel chapter 2, if I'm not mistaken, talking about the mountains. And finally, there is this, this mountain that comes out that crushes all of the other kingdoms. And this is the kingdom of God. And so the concept of mountain as an empire, that is a fairly common symbol or image in Old Testament prophecy. So in most of the commentaries, if you go back and you look at some of these commentaries from 100, 200, 300 years ago, that's going to be what you're going to read. You're going to read that, for the most part, we're dealing with kingdoms as opposed to geographical hills, and that these kingdoms will have risen and fallen, and then ultimately, of course, there will be this seventh kingdom, and then there will be the Antichrist, who is an eighth leader that comes out of them, but really is one of the seven. And so there's lots of reasons. You know, the Bible in chapter 17 talks about seeing the woman in the desert. Then it talks about seeing the woman on many waters. Then it talks about seeing the woman or the city that sits on seven hills. And so you have, in effect, a variety of images or symbols. I'm not sure that any one of them is meant to be taken literally. I think that they're all symbolic of aspects of Mystery Babylon. So I kind of don't get all that excited about someone wanting to use one or more of those symbols as a geographical, I got you now, so it's got to be this or it's got to be that. I think that we have to be a little wiser, and we have to take some of these things symbolically.
What about the whole Seven Mountains Dominionist theology that's come out, in the sort of Dominionist offshoots of the New Apostolic Reformation? And where is that largely sprung from? It's that also has sprung from America, and what's come out of it, a move to make America great again. So is even another aspect of it, perhaps?
It could certainly be. My sense is that this is a prime example of apostasy within evangelicalism.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that it makes sense to say that America is going to pave the way for the kingdom of God, that we have to make America great again so that Jesus will feel that it's safe for him to come back.
Gary, we haven't heard a lot from you. Have you got any thoughts here?
Right. Well, on the seven hills, this kind of goes with some of the other stuff that I wanted to say about Mystery Babylon, but I've never thought about this before, but I think it might make sense. you know, going. I love the book by Derek Gilbert, The Great Inception. And, you know, he's talking about all the different hills, and basically there were many of them were confrontations between God and the other gods, the 70 gods or you know, whatever.
Chemosh, so, Dagon, and Baal, and all of these gods, yes.
And so, I mean, I don't know if he had seven hills in there, and of course one of them was Sinai. So that wouldn't fit necessarily.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he did. It was kind of built around seven mountains, but he is strongly opposed to seven mountain dominionism. I know because Derek and I have talked many times about that.
That's for sure. But what I'm thinking is this goes back to what Mystery Babylon really is. You know, what is Mystery Babylon? Not the final Babylon, you know, or the United States or whatever it might be, but what is Mystery Babylon behind all of this? And it is... It is all of those mountains where, well, the first one was Eden, where Satan came in and with the lie in the garden. In the garden was a mountain. It says, where is that? In Psalms.
Yeah, well, there's also, of course, the mountain of God. You know, you were in Eden, the mountain of God.
Yeah. So Eden was the first mountain where Mystery Babylon was manifest, so to speak, when the lie came and men fell. And then, you know, of course, Mount Hermon, the fallen angels came down, or, you know, to the people of those days, it was the gods came down and all of this stuff happened. So many of those mountains is really... where Mystery Babylon comes from, because when, and this kind of goes with what the other parts that I was going to say, so if we have time, I'll just keep going here for a minute. Okay, so Mount Hermon, you know, that's the fallen angels, they were right out there before Noah's flood, and the giants teaching humanity all of their ways, teaching war and technology and even abortion, I believe it says, in the Book of Enoch. But so that was what when Nimrod came along at the Tower of Babel, that's what he was trying to restore. He was trying to restore what was happening before the flood, bring the gods down. You know, Babel. One of the names of or one of the meanings of Babel is gate of the gods. And along with confusion, but so he was trying to bring these same gods that had manifested before the flood, trying to open a way for them to come back again, and he was building himself a hill, the Tower of Babel. He was building a hill,
and, the great primeval mound.
Yeah, and so a hill and bringing the gods down seems to be a big part of what Mystery Babylon is, bringing the gods back to Earth and to restore, you know, Atlantis, you could say. I think that's what Nimrod was trying to do.
Which is actually, ironically, another reason why it could be America fitting, because, of course, you had Francis Bacon and the New Atlantis.
The New Atlantis, yes. Mm-hmm. So that all fits together. And, you know, I think what happened was, you know, after the flood, they, the fallen angels, Lucifer, whatever, they couldn't just come down and be among humanity and teach them right there, you know, in person. They had to go into hiding, and that's where the mystery schools came from. Was to pass down all this knowledge secretly, and so what Alice Bailey talks about is, I don't know if I'm being coherent here or not, but what Alice Bailey talks about, you know, the externalization of the hierarchy. This is what, and of course, she's very influential in the UN, right?
Yes,
right.
Yes,
her writings is. To bring about that externalization of the hierarchy, that's just they're trying to bring about the same thing that Nimrod was trying to bring about, bring the gods back.
Yes, which manifest the gods of old.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the New Atlantis. That's the whole business. You know, that's that as above, so below, Tony.
Right. Yeah. And,
right.
To bring heaven on earth, you know, their version of heaven back to earth, the golden age, which is hell on earth, really, you know.
Which kind of ties that whole Seven Mountains Dominionism with the New Age movement that Alice A. Bailey started. And, of course, you get all of this tied up with the United Nations, which sits largely in New York. So, yeah.
That's right.
I think it's interesting pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Okay, a couple. I'll just really shorten this, but in Isaiah 14, 13 and 14, it talks about, well, before that, it mentions the king of Babylon, and then he begins talking to Lucifer, you know, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God, set my throne on high, and I will make myself like the Most High. Well, I found something in the Faith Life Study Bible I thought was interesting. It says, this being named in Isaiah wanted to rule the divine council, and so my comment is, that's what he wants now. He wants to rule the divine council or create his own divine council with himself as God. So it kind of fits into that divine council way of looking at things. So, you know, Lucifer found out that when humans were created, he found out, oh, these guys are going to be ruling the divine council. And I don't think he liked that very well. So that's where he started. That's where he started undermining God's plan, you know, for his new divine council, and he's been at it ever since. And I call that Mystery Babylon. But so one other thing I just want to throw out, and then I'll be done. We didn't get to talk about the wilderness very much, but something that Doug and I included in our book, too, The Revealing, when Heiser talks about the Day of Atonement, and he talks about what the wilderness really means. And, you know, I have some points, which I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but basically the wilderness in the Old Testament was associated, and in, you know, Near Eastern thought, associated with the forces of chaos, which are hostile to God. You know, and it says in Leviticus, it says, they shall no more sacrifice their sacrifices to goat demons after whom they whore. So really, the scapegoat was for Azazel, which was the also in Enoch and the other Dead Sea Scrolls, Azazel was the leader of the angels that sinned in Genesis 6. So it kind of all fits together that the harlot in the wilderness, basically, she's living in the demonic realm or in the realm of chaos. So I think really the wilderness and those other, you know, these other symbols, the seven hills, and if we could get into the waters, which could have to do with chaos also, that's what it's saying, is that's what the heart, that's where she lives. That's all.
Interesting. Doug?
Well, we need to wrap, so I was just going to point out that the notion of Babylon, it crosses over. The great city is not just Mystery Babylon. It's just not the harlot wearing purple and sitting on top of the beast, but it really includes all the facets we've talked about, the politics, the military, the economics. And you see that when you really look at these different verses that talk about the fall of Babylon. Revelation 14:8 says, and there followed another angel saying, Babylon has fallen, that great city, because she made all the nations drink the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Isaiah 21:9, behold, here cometh a chariot of men with a couple of horsemen. And he answered and said, Babylon is fallen, and all the graven images of her gods he hath broken unto the ground. And so these last two verses I won't read, but just Jeremiah 51:8, Revelation 18:2, they all talk about Babylon is fallen, and they all have this sort of double repetition, Babylon is fallen. And so it's definitely going to fall. And it's all more than just a single city or just a single religion.
Amen to that.
Yeah. Underneath all the religions, is the falseness. And I think a sort of Luciferian agenda. I do not see Islam as being the end time religion. May fall into the end time religion.
It's playing a part.
Yeah.
It's playing a part.
But ultimately, Lucifer's going to want the worship. Gary.
I think so.
Oh, I was just going to say, Islam will be seduced into that false religion, I believe.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's what I think is going to happen too. So, wow, it's been a fascinating discussion. I knew it would be. Thanks for being on the show again, guys. And I'm, you know,
absolutely.
I'm sure there's so much more we could have brought in, but yeah.
Well, I think we covered a lot of ground. Yeah. So I think it you know, it really fits. I can remember when it's my parting comment when I talked with the folks at Southwest Radio Church and they were bringing together Bill Salas and Joel Richardson together for the debate. I go, gosh, you're kind of missing the point. There's really three arguments and you're not talking about the one that that I believe is the correct one. And you know, and so Larry Spargimino just kind of smiled at me. So so this is kind of our rebut to both of those points of view.
And I think you're, you know, the way you guys see it is probably closer to mine, as you mentioned at the beginning there, Doug. Hey, so before we go, can you guys give the listeners your websites?
Sure. Gary, go ahead. You go first.
Okay. So the website that I have is for Doug and my book, The Revealing, and the website is the-revealing.com.
And you can find my website a couple of different ways. You can just do a search on Doomsday Doug, or go to doomsdaydoug.com, or you can do a search on faith-happens.com, and then you can find me and all of those books I've written, along with the book that Gary and I wrote, at Amazon. You can do a search on S. Douglas Woodward, and you can find me there. And our book is available both on Kindle as well as on iBooks and printed copy. But for those that live in foreign lands, you may wish to do the electronic download. It's a lot cheaper than the mail.
Sounds good. Well, thanks. Yeah, and I'm sure we'll come back again for some other fascinating discussions before long.
Sure.
We never seem to run out of things to talk about, do we, guys?
No, I'm a rather chatty person.
There's plenty out there to talk about.
All right. So, yeah, thanks.
Very good. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
So, folks, our website is aminutetomidnight.com, and don't forget Midnight is spelled M-I-D-N-I-T-E. And on our website, besides putting all of our shows, which we put in audio and video format, and you can also find them on iTunes, we also put articles, and we do have a community forum, which you're welcome to join if you want to as well. And we have a Facebook group, and A Minute to Midnight Facebook group, if you want to join that as well, you'd be welcome. And all the music I write, play, and record, that's on our shows, and you can find free music on our website. And also, we do run A Minute to Midnight completely by donations. We don't do any advertising or sell any products, so we really do appreciate it when people help us out through donations. It's greatly we're very grateful for that. And you can do that on our website as well. You'll find ways to donate to A Minute to Midnight. And I think that's about it. On behalf of the team at aminutetomidnight.com, this is Tony saying goodbye. God bless and have a great week. We'll see you in a few days' time with another show.